I love it when Dirk leads that song, and he can hit those notes, and I'm right here close, and a lot of times he's over here, or used to be over here at the front. He can hit those notes, and I think that's great. Next time we have our Wednesday night singing, I'm going to lead that song. And everybody gets to find out what it sounds like to torture a cat with electricity. Because I cannot hit those notes and I cannot make it sound like that. In my mind, I think I can sing like Dirk, but in my mouth, it comes out of my mouth. It ain't like that at all. I really appreciate the song leaders here. I can't say it enough. What do you think God will do? Not about anything in particular, but just about everything in general. What are your thoughts? What do you think God will do? The Bible is not a book of suggestions. It's not a book of what ifs. It's not a book of maybe or maybe not. The Bible is a book of God's commands, God's thoughts, God's will. Unfortunately, many people believe that since we're created in the image of God, then God is like us and He thinks like us. He has our flaws and our mistakes. This is a tendency of many people, making people believe that God will do this or that, when in reality we know what God will or will not do based on what the Scriptures tell us. I even heard a woman one time justify her sinful lifestyle by saying, "Well, everyone makes mistakes and God understands." That sounds like a really good answer. But the truth is, we can't live a sinful lifestyle because we thought that God would do like we would do, or we thought that God was more like us. The reality is God tells us what He will do. There's a story in the Bible about a man with a problem, and his name was Naaman. He was a good man. In fact, he was captain of the host of Syria. If you'll listen to what he's described, 2 Kings chapter 5 and verse 1, and we're going to spend the rest of the evening in 2 Kings chapter 5. And looking at this story of Naaman, Naaman was a great guy. From everything that we gather, Naaman was a good person. It says in 2 Kings chapter 5 and verse 1, "Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper." There's some interesting things in this verse. First of all, Naaman apparently was a pretty good guy, not just because it says he was a good guy. In fact, I don't know what he had done, but he evidently did something really, really good, because it says, "Because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria." Okay, so the Lord delivered Syria because of this one man. That tells you what kind of person he is. This would mean that he had made an impression on the Lord. Can you imagine getting a description like this one of someone, for instance? And I tried to put together an illustration, maybe with a girlfriend or boyfriend or something like that. And I felt like the only way to give a good illustration would be to give an illustration of a preacher. What if you had this description? "Well, we've hired a new preacher. He's as sound as they come. He knows the Bible better than anyone I have ever known. He has a great wife and three wonderful kids. He grew up in a small country town. He loves hunting. He loves fishing. He loves everything outdoors. He's written several articles on preaching that have actually been published. He's ready to get to work and will be stepping into the pulpit this Sunday." But, we're always waiting for that but. But, he doesn't speak a word of English. it sounded so great up until that. But, so Naaman was this great guy and he did great things, and even the Lord had spared Syria because of him, but he was a leper. That's kind of how we feel. We get this feeling about Naaman. He was a great man, but he was a leper. Now, I'm not sure if you know what that meant for people of his day, but leprosy was a dreadful disease for which there was no cure. And it was such a disease that people would stay away from you. People that were unclean, if they had leprosy, they were considered unclean. You're walking down the street and someone walks up to you, "You got leprosy." You have to say, "Unclean, unclean." You have to let them know that you're unclean so they won't come around you. Can you imagine right now in our day and age, if someone, every time someone was tested positive for coronavirus, they had to announce it? "Unclean, unclean." Oh, good grief, we'd stone them. Look at what we're doing in society. You know, these people are, everybody, "I don't want nobody to know. If somebody knows, they're going to hate me," or whatever. Well, the people who were considered unclean were forbidden to associate with the general populace. The fact that Naaman had this disease must have been quite disturbing to those who were in his circle. Naaman's situation is extremely rare because he's captain of the guard. He's there. He's given. You're showing what is going on in his life. He's actually living. It's not saying there was a man named Naaman who was living in isolation. He was exiled to an island because there was, no. It says that he was captain of the guard. He was active. He was active duty, if you will. It must have been disturbing to those who were in his circle. Let's continue 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 2 and 3. Verse 2 and 3, it says, "And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid. And she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, 'Would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy.'" This made perhaps the Israelite servant girl and her boss Naaman's wife were having a conversation. They were talking about Naaman. Maybe his ailment came up, and you know, he's such a great guy. It's a shame that he has this dreadful disease. She made a simple, a very, very innocent comment. You know, I would that the Lord's anointed, the prophet of the Lord were here, he could heal him of that leprosy. I'm sure Naaman did not want this disease, and from the passage we gather that his wife didn't want him to have it either. Now, a resolution has been proposed, but not by a doctor and not by someone from the king's court, but rather by a servant girl. So what is going to be done? Now, what happens next is the conversation gets taken to the king, and he makes a bold statement. 2 Kings chapter 5 and verse 5 as we continue. Verse 5 says, "And the king of Syria said..." It doesn't say that they took it to him and they said, "Hey, listen to this. This servant girl had this thing to say," and it doesn't give us all that information. It just says that what was spoken of just now got taken to the king, and the king of Syria said, go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel. And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 pieces of gold, and 10 changes of raiment. From what I gather, the one that took him the information was none other than Naaman himself. Because you don't see anything where someone went back and told Naaman. It just says, "and he took with him." I don't know how big those pieces of gold were, but even if they were only worth a dollar a piece, you think about that, $6,000 is quite a bit. I'm sure a piece of gold back in those days was worth more than a dollar. But anyway, the talent, from everything I could find, and we're living in a modern day of technology, it's pretty easy to look stuff up, and I was able to look a lot of stuff up. From what I gather, a talent was about 75 pounds. Talent wasn't like a coin, like a nickel or something like that. A talent was 75 pounds. In fact, I even saw stones. I looked up on the internet and found these pictures of these stones that were weights that they would put on the scales that weighed a talent so they could balance a talent stone. Okay, 75 pounds. I remember as a kid, every year before school, we would go, just before school would start, we would go shopping for school clothes. We get 5 new pairs of pants, 5 new shirts, new pair of shoes. This is going to last us the whole year, mostly. And it was a good thing. It was neat for us. You know, couldn't wait. I didn't want to go back to school, but that kind of eased the pain. Got all new duds, and you get to go with new clothes and try to take care of them and make them last or whatever the case may be. That's only 5 pairs of pants and 5 shirts. Here they're given, when we look at this, sometimes we think, gave them 10 changes of raiment. What is that? Well, that would have been something costly. 10 changes of garments, because not everybody had a closet like mine that was full of suits and ties or full of welding shirts or whatever the case may be. They didn't have closets like that back then. They took good care of their clothes. That's all they had. The king was offering here a lot of money. He was offering to pay a lot, not necessarily just in money, silver, gold, and these clothes, to have the captain of his guard cured of leprosy. So that tells us that either one of two things: either he cared enough about Naaman that he wanted to see him cured, or maybe a little bit of both. The other being, I always worry about catching leprosy from this guy. If we could get him cured, that would be great. That way I don't have to worry about being around him all the time. Perhaps it was that the king would come around Naaman and he would, "Yeah, I need you to go out here." Just kind of standoffish. I don't know if Naaman had to announce his uncleanness when he walked in. Everybody knew him. He offered a lot of money. 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 6 and 7. "And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, Now when this letter has come to you, this is what the letter says. Now when this letter has come to thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman my servant to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy. And it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes and said, Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man from his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me. The king of Israel gets this letter, Naaman comes to him, brings him this letter. I don't know if he had his servant, he had people with him, he had an entourage, if you will. But he brings this letter, the king reads the letter, he's like, he starts tearing his clothes. He's like, oh, this is terrible. This is an act of war. He didn't send the letter to the prophet. He didn't send the letter to anyone else, but he sent it straight to the top. He went to the king. He sent it to the king. He figured that if there was such a prophet in Israel, surely, rather than try to hunt him down, take it to the king. He'll know where to find this guy. Take this letter, go straight to the king. Where do I go to find the prophet? Don't worry about that. Take it to the king. He'll find the prophet. He'll know where the prophet is. If there was such a prophet that's capable of curing leprosy, certainly he would be part of the king's council, you would think. Apparently, he wasn't wrong, because as soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he freaked out. He's thinking, what am I going to... He thought this was a challenge by the king of Syria. Here, fix this guy. Cure him of his leprosy. There's no way I can do that. And when I say no, this guy's going to think that's defiance. It's going to be an act of war. He's sending this guy over here to provoke a battle. However, the prophet Elisha heard about this letter, and he sent words back to the king to comfort the king. 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 8 and 9. 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 8 and 9. And it was so, when Elisha, the man of God, had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. This is not an arrogant statement. This is just basically a confirmation. I love Elisha's nonchalant reply. He's basically saying, Why does this request cause you so much alarm? Don't you know that God really can heal people of their leprosy? Don't you have faith in the God that runs or rules over our people? Send it to me and I'll show you, and I'll show him that there is such a God in all of Israel. He's fixing to introduce the king, and he's fixing to introduce Naaman to the God of Israel. 2 Kings chapter 5 and verse 9. 2 Kings chapter 5 and verse 9, it says, So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, Go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. I told you all this morning when I was in Bible class, I was going to be stepping on my sermon for tonight. As we talked about this in Bible class this morning. Here's something to think about. How do you suppose Elisha is going to cure Naaman of his leprosy? Do you think he's going to do it of his own power? Absolutely not. We know he's going to do it by the power of God. You think he'll be healing Naaman according to God's grace? Absolutely. I don't know anyone that would argue with that point. However, it required something. Dipping in the Jordan 7 times. Now, some people today would be quick to tell you that if anything had to be done in order to obtain something such as salvation, then it must not be of the grace of God. It's not God's grace if something has to be done. Well, I have to be baptized. Nope, then it must not be of grace. It's of works. I have to hear, I have to believe. Nope, then it must not. I have to repent. Nope, then it must not be of grace. Right here we have an example. Naaman was cured by the grace of God, but there was something that needed to be done. There were conditions to his healing. And if those conditions weren't met, too bad. Salvation itself, according to the faith-only doctrine, is not of grace if it demands obedience. Again, just a thought. Elisha had no desire to meet Naaman. Interesting. Naaman must have been something else when he shows up there. You think about the amount of money he's carrying. He's carrying a lot of money. He's got, as I mentioned, an entourage. He shows up in his horses and his chariots with his servants. And he shows up there. People might want to run out and meet him. Hey, look at that. That's a captain of the guard. That's somebody special. Elisha had no desire to meet Naaman. He didn't even need to see him or touch him in order to heal him. In fact, once he showed up at Elisha's house, he didn't even tell him what to do to be healed, but rather he sent someone out to take the message to him. I can just picture Elisha sitting in his study, and Naaman pulls up with his chariot and his entourage out front. Servant comes in and tells Elisha, says, "Hey, there's someone out here to see you." Elisha says, "Okay, that's probably Naaman. Go and tell him to wash 7 times in the Jordan and he will be made whole." If you continue to read later on in the story, that servant that took the message was probably Gehazi. And there's another story altogether. Now the next verse is key to our lesson, 2 Kings chapter 5 and verse 11. Okay, so you picture the scene. Naaman shows up with his chariot and all his horses and all his helpers and servants and all of that. He shows up there expecting Elisha to come out and heal him, because that's what he got sent there for. Because he went to the king first and the king rent his clothes. Naaman probably backed off when the king started tearing his clothes. He's probably like, "What in the world is wrong with this guy? What's going on here?" Then apparently the king says, "Go down to 4th Street and take a left on Elm and go down 2 blocks and you'll find that's where the prophet lives. And you pull up in his house and you talk to him, he's going to heal you of this leprosy." So he does. He goes down to Elisha's house. And it says, verse 11, "But Naaman was wroth." He was angry and went away and said, Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper." Naaman made an all too familiar and very, very, very near fatal mistake when he said, Behold, I thought. I wonder how many people will stand before the judgment of the Lord, and when the Lord says, "Depart from me, ye workers of iniquity," their answer will be, "But Lord, I thought. But I thought I didn't have to do that. I thought that wasn't important." Naaman thought the prophet would perform some great ceremony to heal him. And not only was he disappointed in the fact that he didn't actually get to see the prophet, or that the prophet didn't come and do some great thing, he cringed at the thought of subjecting himself to the orders of the prophet by dipping himself in that filthy, nasty river, the River Jordan. He says in verse 12, "Are not Abana and Parfar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned away and went away in a rage. Turns out, of all the great attributes that Naaman had, he apparently also had a generous measure of arrogance and pride. I know that being from Texas, we have a tendency to think that we live in the greatest state in the whole United States. I don't think I'd get an argument from anyone in this room. But if you talk to a native of another state, you will find that they believe that they live in the greatest state, for the most part. To have pride in where you're from is not new, nor is it lost in the history books. I remember when my kids were very young, they were taking some Taekwondo classes. And one time when they were ready to test for rank, the instructor called in a 9th degree master from Korea. And this guy had 9 degrees of rank. He was amazing. He was an old guy. He was in his late 60s and could jump and do all kinds of stuff. And he's just really amazing. It was just an honor to be around him. And I remember after the kids tested, he handed out medals for them to put around their necks. And they had never got that before. None of the class had ever gotten that before. And they were excited about getting it. And these medals weren't like Olympic medals. They were like carnival medals. And I can remember very clearly Master An holding up the medal with a big smile on his face. And he said, "Made in Korea." "Made in Korea." I can't imagine how he would have felt if someone would have said, "Korea? Don't you have anything that's made in the USA? Don't you have anything made in America? Korea?" He was proud. that was made where he was from.
Made in Korea.
This, in a sense, is what Naaman is doing here. I don't know if Elisha heard Naaman's complaint or not, but it was an insult. Washing Jordan? We're better than that. His arrogance was way up here. First of all, it wasn't going to be the river that healed him in the first place, but rather the obedient act of dipping into it 7 times. There was no magic in the waters. However, at this point, it doesn't look like even that is going to happen. I want to know who he gave the silver and the gold to. I don't really get a picture of that. Was it the king of Israel or was it Elisha? I don't think so. Maybe. I don't know. Did he give it to anyone? It never really says. He might have gave it to the king right off the bat. Irrelevant. I'm not really sure. Let's continue. Now, after Naaman peels out in his chariot in a rage, mad, it says in 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 13 and 14. 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 13 and 14. And his servants came near and spake unto him and said, My father, if the prophet had bid thee to do some great thing, wouldest thou have not have done it? How much rather then, when he saith to thee, Wash and be clean? Then went he down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. This was a dreadful disease. It wasn't just a disease where you don't feel good. It wasn't just a disease where you're sick. It was a disease where your digits start to fall off. It was a disease where you got this white, crusty scale all over your body, and people could recognize it as leprosy. Naaman just got a lesson in humility from a servant. My father, if he would have asked you to do some great thing, would you have done it? Then why not do this? It's not that much to ask. He then obeyed the command of Elisha. Reluctant obedience, but obedience nonetheless. How many people refuse to accept salvation on God's terms and go to their graves in arrogant defiance, refusing to accept that God expects those who come to Him to obey. Simple, simple commands. I'm not getting in that water. I'm not getting in that water. Who does he think he is? I'm not going to do it. Oh, but they just had a servant like Naaman to talk some sense into them. I can't imagine what he must have felt like when he came up out of the Jordan. His filthy, unclean, leprous skin was like that of a child. We know that as he came up out of the water, He not only left his leprosy, but he left his pride and his arrogance there in the River Jordan as well. He could have jumped for joy and headed home. Look, I'm clean! I'm clean! Hug those servants. I wonder how long it had been since Naaman had had a hug. You know, we think about things like that and we take it for granted. The human touch is something that is amazing. God put us, designed us to where we need that. We need that. In fact, there's been tests done where they take babies, newborn babies, and one of them they'll have somebody nurture them and touch them, and the other one they'll have them just give them their needs. They usually don't survive. They don't last long. I wonder how long it had been since Naaman had received a hug. He probably could have jumped for joy and hugged all them. However, he needed to make something right. 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 15 through 17. There's something he needed to make right. Verses 15 through 17. And he returned to the man of God and all his company and came and stood before him. There's a difference right there. You look at that. What did he do the first time? He pulls up to Elisha's house, stands in his chariot, honks the horn a few times. You going to come out here and do something or what? Not this time. This time it says he goes to the man of God and he stands before him. He goes up to him. He goes and he confronts him. And he said, Behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now therefore, I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant. But he said, As the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none. He says, Look, let me pay you something. Let me give you a blessing. And the man of God says, As the Lord liveth, I will take nothing from you. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. And Naaman said, "Shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant 2 mules burden of earth? For thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord." He said, "Look, let me pay you. Let me give you something." "Nope, I'm not going to take it. Come on, let me at least give you some blessing or something." He said, "Nope, I won't take it." "Well, then in that case, at least let me take 2 loads of dirt from here. Let me take 2 mules burden loads, what as much as a mule can carry twice, or as much as 2 mules can carry, let me take with me." His pride is gone, his arrogance is gone, and his leprosy is gone. So he goes back to the man of God, and this time he gets to talk to Elisha in person. He offers to pay him. Elisha refuses. And after all, as far as he's concerned, he didn't do anything. Elisha's like, "No, yeah, I'm not going to take money for something I didn't do. God did it all." It's interesting that Naaman wants to take enough dirt home with him that he can worship God on Israelite soil. That's what that's all about. When we first see it, it's like, why would he want to take dirt? So that he can worship God, the one true God that he mentioned earlier, on Israelite soil. Not only is his attitude different, his faith is different as well. Perhaps he spent the rest of his life praising God. Perhaps he spent the rest of his life faithful to God. And from what we read, that's exactly what happened. We do know that if it weren't for his servants talking some sense into him, he never would have met the living God. He's even concerned later on that he might offend God when he goes back to his own king, because there were certain things as his job required him to go into the house of worship of his king, which was a false god. He would have to go into the false god that his master worshipped. And that worried him. Now what am I going to do? Now that I know who the real God is. Look at 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 18 and 19, and we'll close. 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 18 and 19. "In this thing the Lord pardon thy servant." He's talking to Elijah here. He's still talking to Elijah. He says, "In this thing the Lord pardon thy servant, that when my master goeth into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, when I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing." And he said unto him, "Go in peace." So he departed from him a little way. Okay, so he goes, "Please forgive me when I go back, I'm going to have to go into the house of Rimmon. I don't want to be there because I know your God is the real God. Go in peace." And he goes a little way, and that's where our story is going to end for tonight. Naaman made a critical mistake when he said, "I thought." He thought that something was when in reality it wasn't. He thought that things should go his way, but they didn't. He thought his ideas should supersede God's, but they didn't. Maybe it's time that we rethink our ideas and our preconceived notions and look a little bit deeper into what thus saith the Lord. If you have any need, the message is yours. Won't you come while together we stand and sing the song that's been selected.